Good day to all of our investors and guests. This is the Rudd Commentary Podcast, and I'm your host, Josh Rudd. I'm the managing partner and principal wealth advisor here at Steer Wealth. For our new listeners who may not be familiar with who we are, at Steer Wealth, we manage investments for successful families, high-performing professionals, and organizations across the country, and become your very own proactive investment management team, confidant, and personal wealth advisor, so you can relax and focus your time and energy on chasing what you love. Well, it's that time of year that we all look forward to. It's time to gather all those documents that have been piling up over the last 6 weeks and rummage through our receipts over the past year and send all that stuff to our accountant. Yes, it's tax time. And unlike ignoring your doctor's appointment, this is something you unfortunately must do. Having said that, I thought it would be an excellent opportunity to help our investors take advantage of some tax-related opportunities, but more importantly, avoid some of the costly tax-related mistakes we see a lot of investors make over the year. But before we dive in, just a quick disclosure. At Steer Wealth, we are not CPAs or tax advisors, nor are any of us qualified to prepare your taxes or give you qualified tax advice. So please check with your personal tax advisor before implementing any of the topics or recommendations discussed on this podcast today. So now that we've got that out of the way, let's briefly go through a short list that we call our Dirty Dozen of tax-related errors or missed opportunities that I feel add some value today and give you positive ROI for the time invested in listening to this episode of the Rudd Commentary today. So let's jump into the 12 biggest tax mistakes that we see as wealth advisors here at Steer Wealth. In our last episode, I described what it means to be a high performer. Well, our first and one of the most common tax-related oversights is simply missing the transition to quarterly tax payments. For our seasoned high performers, you know what I'm referring to. Remember that first year that you realized that you were so proud you finally crossed that stretch income goal and that you had finally made it, only to vomit right after you wrote that big check to the IRS for more than all of your friends make annually? For those of our rising stars listening to this episode, many of you are now transitioning from a 9-to-5 to an entrepreneurship, are now starting to make more money than you ever thought was possible. I've found that there are three primary things to consider regarding increasing taxes when you become very successful. The first is somewhere around the $200,000 to $250,000 range in income. Tax planning becomes an important part of your process. You really need to start looking at the details. You need to start looking at that standard deduction versus itemizing your taxes and really just talking to somebody. Around $450,000 to $500,000 a year, you really need to accept the fact that you're a high performer and prepare for much higher tax payments and unexpected increases from year to year. This is not simply having to come up with an extra $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 at tax time. These are some large checks, folks, and so it makes sense for you to have an escrow account and to set money aside over time to prepare for those large tax payments. And this money doesn't have to be set aside earning nothing. This money can be invested and you can be earning a rate of return on these assets that are waiting for those tax payments. So we don't have to miss out. And number three, remember all that income that you had that you never really thought about? This is now material. You're in one of the higher tax brackets. You're making a lot of money. This could be anything from capital gains, real estate income, stock options, passive business, royalties, retirement distributions, and yes, for our retirees, even Social Security income. And remember, get ready for it as your income increases beyond what you thought was possible. The second big oversight that we see for taxpayers and that we talk about a lot actually this time of year while you're preparing your taxes is really just understanding the standard deduction versus itemizing. Most investors don't realize that they generally cannot take tax credit for many of the deductions unless you itemize. This means that that $5,000 contribution that you made to that organization or church last year may not really help you unless you itemize your taxes. What does itemization mean? Itemize means that you must have deductions that exceed the standard deduction, which, believe it or not, has been increasing a lot over the last decade. It currently stands at $29,200 in 2024 for married individuals that are filing jointly. This may catch many of our high performers off guard as they're making a lot of these donations and they're thinking that a lot of these expenses are tax deductible, but it just doesn't count unless you itemize. So it's definitely something to pay attention to. The third thing that we've noticed, and this is not as big as it was a few years ago, but we're still seeing folks that just don't understand this. For the most part, you cannot deduct professional advisory fees the way you could prior to 2018. Before 2018, professional fees were largely tax deductible. Unfortunately, after the 2017 tax change, most of these fees are not, at least at the personal level. This means that those personal accounting, legal, and yes, wealth advisor fees that you may have deducted in the past are no longer deductible. However, there is some good news. This law is set to expire at the end of 2025, but as we all know, there'll probably be changes before then anyway, right? However, I do have some good news, at least for wealth advisors. You are still able to pay some of those wealth advisor fees with pre-tax money. Think about it, an IRA. Which may not be as good as the deductions you were able to take prior to 2018, but it does help a little bit. Number four, ignoring the differences between short-term and long-term capital gains. This could be a really big deal for those of you in the higher tax bracket. Short-term capital gains are paid at the same rate that you would pay on your ordinary income, such as wages from a job or your pass-through income from your business. Long-term capital gains, on the other hand, is a tax applied to assets held for more than 1 year. And the long-term capital gains rates are currently 0, 15%, and 20%, depending on your income. This is definitely something to keep in mind if you're planning on selling an investment. I know that here at Steer Wealth, one of the things that we see on a consistent basis is assets when they're transferred in when a new family hires us. There's a lot of legacy assets that have been held for a longer period of time. This is just something to keep in mind. There are a big difference between short-term and long-term capital gains, and investors need to be aware of those. Having said that, this is a great segue into the next opportunity or challenge with taxes that we typically see every year, and that's not harvesting capital losses. Remember, you can harvest capital losses at the end of the year to offset some capital gains. And there are some rules around that, and you'll definitely want to check with your wealth advisor so you don't have what's called a wash sale. But you can definitely take what we call paper losses at the end of the year if you've had some windfall profits and capital gains and had a really good year. And that doesn't mean that you have to pull your money out of investments. It just means you have to follow the rules and make a substantial enough change so that you can go ahead and book those paper losses for tax purposes. And again, that's something that I would definitely talk with a financial advisor or wealth advisor about if you have additional questions. The next one, number six, has to do with 401ks. And I want to move into the next segment of tax challenges and opportunities in the retirement area. So let's first talk about 401ks here. A lot of individuals take out 401k loans, which we are not a fan of here in Steer Wealth, but we realize sometimes it does happen and there is a need for that. So we're glad that that's available if you need it. But investors will have a 401k loan and then make a job change. And that's very unfortunate because many plans require that these loans be paid off in full or shortly after you leave a company. And that's just something that a lot of individuals don't realize, especially when you're young and you're trying to move up in positions. It's a very competitive landscape and you're looking at other opportunities. So when you make that job change, just realize that there's a high probability that that loan could be called. And what happens? What do I mean by loan could be called? There's something called a 401k loan offset. And any money that you owe on a 401k plan when you leave a job may be automatically credited back to that loan or have to pay down that loan if you want to transfer or roll over that 401k out. So what happens when this loan offset takes place? Number one, you're typically taxed on the loan payoff like it was a distribution. And that's really a bummer if you're under 59 and a half, because then let's go ahead and pile on another 10% penalty on top of that. These are things that individuals just need to keep in mind when they're dealing with 401k loans. I know 401k loans sound great, but there's a lot of challenges and unexpected surprises along the way from a tax perspective. So remember, if you have a 401k loan and you're going to change jobs, be careful. And that leads to number seven. Let's stay in the retirement area here. Let's talk a little bit about something that's become really popular with IRAs lately, and that's called a backdoor Roth contribution. So first, what is a backdoor Roth contribution? If you don't meet the income requirements or the eligibility to contribute to a Roth IRA, how in the heck do high wage earners get money into that wonderful account called a Roth IRA? So the solution is a backdoor Roth contribution. There are ways to do it, and it's not a complicated process. But the reason it makes our list today is it really needs to be done correctly, and it can be very tedious. Here are a few things to remember. Anyone can make a non-deductible IRA contribution, but a backdoor Roth contribution is mostly beneficial for high wage earners that are already covered by a 401k. These folks are no longer eligible to make either a Roth IRA or a deductible IRA contribution. Something you also need to keep in mind with backdoor Roth contributions is you need to have really good records of the deposit and also the conversion over to a Roth. And please be aware when looking at backdoor Roth contributions and the associated conversion along with it, that there are 2 5-year rule periods that impact these transactions. So if you want to learn more, please let us know, but these can be very tedious processes. And again, not complicated, but something that we definitely have to dot our I's and cross our T's on if we're going to move forward with. Let's go ahead and stay on IRAs for number 8. So we talked about backdoor Roth contributions. Let's talk about just a standard Roth conversion. We get a lot of these requests. A Roth conversion is where we take money from a traditional IRA. We basically prepay the taxes on it and move that money into a Roth. And you can still do that in many cases according to the tax code today. So it's outstanding if you can move money and you have the availability to prepay those taxes and get money into that Roth and take advantage of that tax-free growth and distribution over a long period of time. One of the mistakes, though, that we see with these conversions is withholding taxes from those Roth conversions, just like an IRA distribution. Don't do that, especially if you're under age 59 and a half. There are many reasons for that. You'll definitely want to talk to your wealth advisor or tax advisor about that. But that's another one of the big mistakes we see made by investors when doing a Roth conversion. So remember that. Number 8, don't withhold taxes from a Roth conversion. Talk to your accountant or your wealth advisor. Let's move on to number 9 and let's transition into what's called RMDs. So what is an RMD? An RMD is a required minimum distribution out of an individual retirement account for those individuals that are currently 73 and older in 2024. So what does this mean? You've got money in an IRA, it's pre-tax, that means you haven't paid taxes on it yet. The IRS is basically saying, hey, we want our tax money. If you're 73 and older, you need to start transferring some money out of this IRA so you can pay taxes on it. We're not going to go over the formula today, but those of you that are 73 and older in 2024 are going to be required to take this. Now, does that mean that you have to pull your money out of investments and spend it? Absolutely not, but you must move it outside of your IRA and pay taxes on it. RMDs have become one of the most confusing topics for investors over the last few years because beginning in 2020, the RMD age requirements begin a progressive march older. Back in 2019 and prior, 70 and a half was the age that you had to start doing this. Then in 2020, it moved to age 72, and then in 2023 is updated to age 73. And hopefully it will remain at age 70-73 until 2025, when it then updates to 75. So if you had trouble following that, just about everybody does, it gets really confusing. The goalpost keeps getting moved on us here for RMD distributions. But basically, one of the biggest challenges that I see in this area is just that first date sneaking up on investors and then being ready to make that RMD the first year. And this mainly affects a lot of our do-it-yourself investors that may be listening that may not be working with a financial advisor. So number 10 is also regarding RMDs, and that's missing an opportunity to use these RMDs for charitable donations. This is something that I come across quite a bit. A lot of retirees have done really well in retirement, and later in life, they're focused on charity and making charitable contributions to organizations that they feel strongly about. Please remember that you can make charitable contributions from that required minimum distribution that's coming out of your RMD annually. And that's something that you should think about. It has tremendous tax benefits. It can really be a great addition to your overall tax plan, not just from a tax perspective, but also assist you in your charitable planning every year. So something to consider about. Number 10, think about using those RMDs for charitable contributions. Okay, so for the next one, we have the dreaded K-1 form. So first of all, this is something that comes up every year and we hear about on a consistent basis. And our listeners are probably thinking, oh my gosh, yes, K-1s, the dreaded K-1 form. So first of all, what is the K-1 form? The K-1 form is pretty simple. It's an IRS form that's used by partnerships to report income and financial information. So what does that mean? If you own a partnership, private or a publicly traded partnership, and there's income, gains, losses, you're probably going to get a K-1. What's the problem with K-1s and why are they such a pain for investors? The main issue is twofold. They're notoriously late, number one. So they come usually right before the April 15th deadline, and some even come after, believe it or not. But the second thing is many of these are not mailed by your advisor or the firm that you custody your assets with. So to add insult to injury, not only are you getting the form late, but it probably comes in an envelope with a return address from an investment that you may not even recognize. So this is a continual pain every year from investors. It's well known in the industry. And in fact, a lot of wealth advisors and firms avoid these publicly traded partnerships and private partnerships altogether just to save their clients the headache from dealing with a K-1. Now, some investors may know some of the most lucrative investments in a lot of specific industries, such as oil and gas, produce K-1s. And if you want to own these investments, it's an unfortunate part of that ownership process. And now that brings us to the end of our dirty dozen here of tax challenges and opportunities. The biggest piece of advice I can give investors is to hire a qualified tax advisor, bookkeeper, or accountant. I cannot tell you the amount of pain and headache that I've seen very successful families unnecessarily go through because they don't have a great partner by their side. So a few points regarding selecting or evaluating your tax professional. Number one is not all tax professionals are CPAs. There are bookkeepers, there's enrolled agents, there's accountants, and there is CPAs, which we all know extremely well. So just remember, if you're doing a simple 1040, if your taxes are relatively easy to complete, but you'd still like someone else's signature on that line, an enrolled agent is just fine. And there's a lot of highly qualified individuals out there that do that and may save you a little bit of money in the process. Like I said earlier, having that signature on that tax form, in my opinion, from a qualified individual, is worth the money. So I think hiring an accountant just from that perspective, getting that professional advice, and having someone else sit next to you in the audit process is worth every penny. The next is, when you're selecting a qualified tax professional, look for someone that's involved in the tax planning process with you, that's not just entering information into the system and spinning out the results. You need a partner that's walking with you through these tax decisions, and having someone that can be a sounding board is extremely important. Another thing that I would like you to consider when you're evaluating your tax professional or looking for a new one is someone with a balanced approach towards risk. You know, I've been doing this quite a long time, and we've worked with a lot of great CPAs and enrolled agents and bookkeepers over the years. The ones that I feel add the greatest amount of value are those that have a more balanced approach towards how aggressive an investor should or should not be in their tax planning, deductions, entity selection, or just general feedback and questions on what should be done and what should not be done. Something to consider, especially for our entrepreneurs as they build their business and are looking for that quality advice. Another thing that I want our listeners to consider is someone that specializes and is knowledgeable or has experience in your specific profession is extremely valuable. I know that as wealth advisors, we have to work with very specialized tax professionals on our side of the business and understand the nuances of what we do day to day. And I would recommend that for anybody that's a high performer. And the last thing is, when selecting or working with a tax professional, what really adds value is someone that's going to sit down next to you throughout the year. And this could be just one meeting in the fourth quarter and give you advice in real time about things that should be done now to help with your tax liability in the years to come. I feel like tax planning is really backward looking and more automated and has developed into something that's not quite as planning centered as it used to be. And when we find a good accountant or a good bookkeeper or enrolled agent that does that with our clients, we really enjoy working with them. Well, hopefully those items helped all of our listeners today think about some things they can do in 2024 to help for tax planning this year and beyond. Well, as always, I'd like to thank all of you for taking the time to listen today. If you enjoyed this episode or learned something new, please take time to rate our podcast and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or your preferred podcast platform and never miss an episode. Also, if you know other investors that would enjoy the show today, please share the Rudd Commentary Podcast through email or on social media. We also like feedback on our program and ideas for future topics. If you have the time, we would enjoy hearing from you. All of us here at Steer Wealth would like to thank you, our investors and clients, for your trust. Thank you for allowing us to be your partner in your long-term financial journey. We take our role very seriously. Thank you very much for listening today. This is the Rudd Commentary. I'm your host, Josh Rudd. And from all of us here at Steer Wealth, invest long and prosper.
The Rudd Commentary is distributed for informational purposes only. and is not intended to constitute legal, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Nothing herein constitutes an offer to sell or solicitation for any offer to buy any security. All investment strategies and investments involve risk of loss, including the possible loss of principal invested, and nothing herein should be construed as a guarantee of any specific outcome or profit. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Any opinions expressed by employees of the Rudd Company, DBA, Steer Wealth, are opinions and do not reflect the opinions of any affiliates. The opinions expressed by guest speakers are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Steer Wealth or any affiliates. Guest appearances on this program does not imply Steer Wealth's endorsement of any entity, person, product, service, or investment. All opinions are current and only as of the date of recording and are subject to change without notice.